welcome to the Business Standard Morning Show. I'm Swapnil Joglekar. Let's take a look at the stories for the day. Despite the global headwinds, passenger vehicle exports from India saw an impressive 11% growth in the first 11 months of 2022. So is this just a flash in the pan, or is it a signal that India's automobile sector has come of age? Rebar Ghassanyal and Tariq Ahmed have the answer.
Not just the impressive domestic sales, top passenger vehicle makers also saw double-digit growth in their exports last year. According to the Society of Indian Automobile Manufacturers, the passenger vehicle exports saw 11% growth during the first 11 months of 2022. December data is yet to be released. And in this, Maruti Suzuki led from the front with a 28% jump. It exported 263,068 units during the period, up from 205,450 units in calendar year 2021. Its closest rival, Hyundai Motor India, also saw a strong growth of 13.7% in exports during calendar year 2022. That is 148,300 units, up from 130,380 units in 2021. Mahindra & Mahindra saw a 12.2% jump in exports for 2022. From 29,910 to 33,568. Last month, the Minister of State in the Ministry of Commerce and Industry, Anupriya Patel, reported that the export of the total number of automobiles increased from 41,34,047 in 2020-2021 to 56,17,246 in 2021-2022. Registering an impressive growth of 35.9%. Indian automobile majors like Maruti primarily export to countries in Africa, West Asia, Latin America, ASEAN, and neighboring regions. Export of two-wheelers also saw a good jump. For instance, the month of December 2022 saw Honda Motorcycle and Scooter India export 17,020 two-wheelers, marking a 30% year-on-year increase in export. The numbers, therefore, speak for themselves. So what have been the major factors contributing to this growth?
We've built a very strong manufacturing base that not only contributes to the domestic economy in terms of employment, in terms of technology, in terms of just sheer volume of demand, but also has a significant export base now is an opportunity wherein disruption is taking place. We are moving into, from automobiles really, to a mobility solutions space. Within that, fuels are changing. So now that is an advantage that we can capitalize on. And you see the government's approach to this has been very proactive. We have a robust policy agenda in position already. You have the PLI scheme in general, you have the PLI scheme for battery ACC, and you have FAME 1 and FAME 2. Now that incentivizes the domestic consumer, but it also then gives us scale to export as well.
Rajat Mahajan, who is a partner in Deloitte, adds that the semiconductor supply easing out is also a major factor.
So one of the key reasons for the exports to increase is the last 6 to 8 months have been really good because the semiconductor supply has eased out. As soon as that happened, India started producing more, right? The capacity utilizations increase. That's one. Now, export as a market helps organizations get better profitability, okay? So that's the second reason why this shift happened. The third is a replacement, right? India slowly over a period of time, and it's not only the OEMs, but also the entire auto component industry, which has been supporting this growth by increasing their technology levels over a period of time, have India has come out as a very strong contender in the exports market any which ways.
But this does not mean that the road ahead is free of challenges, Mahajan explains.
So, as I said, right, one of the key reasons or the challenges from an export standpoint is the balance between domestic and exports. And as I had mentioned earlier as well, a large dependence on exports does not help organizations. The third part is, as I said, global inflation, right, is increasing. So is Indian. Increases, and India is being looked at an export hub. We will have a double whammy because on one hand, we will have to import certain, because we still, for advanced technologies and other areas, we are dependent on imports, right? So if we import, we'll be importing at a higher cost, okay? We'll be producing at a higher cost because of inflation, which means that the overall cost of the vehicle might increase.
Nandeep Vaidyam, who is an associate professor at Anil Surendra Modi School of Commerce, adds.
Right. So if you look at the profile of countries which are importing, then they are the mid or low income countries. And they certainly have more sensitivity to the inflation and the interest rates. We are seeing global headwinds on inflation and interest rates. And therefore, maybe in the short run to medium term, we may see some challenges.
So what will it take to sustain this growth?
So one is investment in R&D must be continuous and at a sustained basis for a long time. The second, what is extremely important, is MSMEs form the backbone of any industrial economy. A disruption is taking place. It is the duty of both the government and the large OEMs to ensure that there is hand-holding of the MSMEs done till they are able to absorb the technology and start becoming repart of that global supply chain and the local supply chain. We must also reach out to universities of higher education, especially engineering and technology-based universities, to attract young people mm-hmm. into automobile and automobile components.
Experts agree that the upward trend in India's auto exports is no fluke and is a product of several positive developments in the manufacturing and regulatory aspects of the sector. However, even if the global headwinds are easing out, sustaining the growth will not be easy. It will mean the corporate sector will have to be more agile in adopting new energy innovations. The government support will also be crucial to help shield the sector from any global turbulence.
Another Indian brand which is now making a splash, the Indian Premier League, or IPL. Its valuation was pegged at ₹10.9 billion in December 2022, making it one of the most successful sporting leagues of the world. So what is the formula behind its success, and will it sustain it in the long run? Tushar Verma's report gives an insight.
In the last week of December 2022, a finance firm reported IPL's valuation at a staggering $10.9 billion. This valuation has put IPL on par with major sports leagues across the world, such as National Basketball Association or NBA and National Football League or NFL in the United States. But unlike the NFL and NBA, which started in the 20th century, IPL is just 15 years old. IPL took off in 2008, and since then its viewership has shot up substantially. In the last season of 2022, the combined viewership across TV and OTT platforms was 426 million. In June 2022, its media rights were auctioned for a total of $6.2 billion for a lock-in period of 5 years, ending 2027. This auction was almost three times higher than the last media rights auction for 2017 to 22.
You know, there is a clear growth in terms of the valuations for a property like IPL. And we did get a sense of that, you know, because of the media right auction which took place in the month of June last year. So if you look at broadcasting growth rates, it's somewhere close to 6 to 7% broadly, and sports is almost 2x or 2.2x of that. So because, you know, there is a scarcity here in terms of sports properties, and, you know, cricket dominating close to 92% of the overall sports market in India, you know, you are seeing that valuation for IPL moving up, because there is too many players right now who are wanting to, you know, have some sort of sports content into their kitty.
The highlight of the latest auction was the sale of digital rights that were higher than the television rights. Walt Disney got TV rights for the Indian subcontinent at $3.02 billion, while Viacom 18 got digital rights for $3.04 billion for 410 matches. In the last auction 5 years ago, Star had all exclusive rights for IPL at a cumulative $2.09 billion.
Digital is going to be growing in a humongous manner. And cricket ubiquity in terms of viewership is going to happen on mobile phones. And that's one of the reasons why the media rights went for the kind of prices that they did go. The shift is between watching a match in a community manner to watching it as a unit of one. And that is really splintering viewerships. But again, it's multiplying viewerships. So both occur together.
The media rights auction shows that per match cost of IPL has touched about $13 million, putting IPL match cost second only to NFL in the USA. The NFL's per match cost is $17 million, while for the NBA it is $2 million. In the case of the English Premier League, which consists of legendary football teams like Manchester United, Liverpool and Chelsea, the match per cost is $11 million. IPL's brand value too has doubled from $4.7 billion in 2021 to $8.4 billion in 2022. Business Standard had reported that this increase in brand value was led by addition of two new teams, Lucknow Supergiants and Gujarat Titans. The auction of the new teams raised about $1.5 billion. The sale of the media rights also added to the increase in brand value. IPL's brand value has increased 318% from 2009 to 2022.
Well, you know, IPL is a big property and, you know, nobody had ever imagined it to be as big as it has become. No surprise here, because we are talking of a very large country of consumers. We are going to be the largest country in the world in a very short period of time. We're all 1.4 billion people. And that many eyeballs, that's 2.8 billion eyeballs, potential eyeballs overall. I think that's big. Needless to say, valuation of IPL is bound to be what it is.
The most valued teams in IPL are the ones that have been playing since the league's inception. Mumbai Indians is the most valued team at $83 million, followed by Kolkata Knight Riders at $76.8 million and Chennai Super Kings at $73.6 million. While IPL now has the second position among major sports league in the cost per match, it is still behind the National Football League in the USA, the only league ahead of it in terms of media rights. In 2021, NFL signed new media rights worth $110 billion over a period of 11 years ending 2033. Leading broadcasters such as ESPN, Fox and NBC were part of this deal and each will pay around $2 billion annually to the NFL. This most valued sports league also saw the incursion of Google's subsidiary YouTube. In a hot deal with the tech giant, the NFL signed media contracts worth $14 billion over a period of 7 years. English Premier League's media rights too are significantly higher than that of IPL's. In 2022, EPL's media rights, both domestic and international, were bought for $12.85 billion. This is more than double the IPL's media rights.
IPL still, you know, as a property, is very dependent on India, right? So if you look at the media rights also, you know, somewhere close to 42% was digital and somewhere close to 50% was TV. And, you know, overseas accounted for not more than 5% of the overall media rights. The ARPUs are fairly compressed here, right? So unless ARPUs don't go up, eventually you will not see monetization opportunity on TV and digital, everything put together. So the point is that in India, you know, it's a very price sensitive market. ARPUs are phenomenally low. And that's the reason our, you know, valuation in terms of media rights are very low as compared to global companies. So because of the opportunity, maybe the valuations of this league are somewhere to the global, you know, companies. But yeah, monetization challenges persist, and which is why media rights still remain to be at a discount.
The IPL's valuation is great news for India's growing sports industry. Its brand value has increased as well. This is in line with the demand for sports content across platforms. The IPL should now look to expand revenue generation from overseas. More recently, the BCCI has invited bids for team ownership in the women's IPL. Our next episode will tell if women's IPL match the IPL's popularity and success.
Meanwhile, the tragic death of former Tata Sons chairman Cyrus Mistry last year had trained the spotlight on car safety measures in India. The government since then has stood its ground on the mandate to have 6 airbags in passenger cars. It comes into effect starting October 1st this year. So how will the new norms benefit airbag makers, and which stocks should you keep an eye on? Harshita Singh's report has the answer.
India's rising casualties from road accidents have evoked swift action from the government recently. Several provisions such as seatbelt reminders and safety star ratings are proposed to roll out this year. The mandate to have minimum 6 airbags in passenger vehicles of up to 8 seats will also kick off from October 1. Given the government push, the airbag market has been pegged to grow 3 times to 7,000 crore rupees by FY27. Analysts expect domestic and international makers of airbags and related components like inflators, cushions and sensors to be the top beneficiaries.
So firstly, I think it was the need of the hour, keeping in mind the, you know, casualties that we have in India with respect to road accidents. Okay, now whether it is two-wheeler, four-wheeler or otherwise, it's a different point altogether. But my sense is that it's a good move. It should possibly help in terms of reducing the fatalities. This move that will come in from October this year will benefit companies which are associated with manufacturing of airbags. So you have companies like Bosch, on which we have a fundamental coverage. We also believe there will be, beneficial to companies which are associated with raw material for manufacturing these kind of bags.
Moreover, the industry is expected to undertake significant capacity addition to meet the October 1 regulatory deadline. As per rating agency ICRA, many players have been gradually scaling up their facilities since the last 6 to 8 months. We expect a capex of Rs. 1000 to 1500 crore in the next 12 to 18 months for capacity addition and localization of components. Besides, experts say that the increase in volumes could make local production economically viable for the import-dependent industry.
The airbag manufacturer suppliers currently import 60 to 70% of their primary components, mostly from their overseas parents, JV partners. However, with the Make in India push and the recent supply chain disruptions that have happened during the COVID and the Russia-Ukraine war, we are expecting capacity enhancements for domestic manufacturing of airbags in the next 6 to 8 months. Minda, Rani Engine Valves, ZS Steering Gears and NDR Auto Components are key manufacturer suppliers of airbags to OEMs in the listed space. We recommend investing in Minda as it has the capacity to manufacture steering airbag systems and is planning to enter in side airbag segment also to improve its share of component and wallet share of a particular car. The stock is trading at about 28.2 times FY25 earnings, which is reasonable for a growing company.
Notably, Uno Minda last year said that it aimed to expand its market share to 20 to 25% from 15% once the new norms kick in. Analysts meanwhile warn that installing additional airbags could increase costs for car makers and subsequently dent demand, especially for entry-level variants. The move has faced resistance from OEMs, including India's largest car maker Maruti Suzuki. The company's chairman, R.C. Bhargava, has already voiced his disapproval of the new airbag rule as he believes it will hurt small and low-cost cars and drive out many potential buyers. At the bourses, shares of Uno Minda, Bosch, Rane Holdings and Rane Madras have gained up to 53% in the last 9 months versus a 4% gain in the Sensex index. That said, equity markets will track global trends and December jobs report in the US today.
After putting his children in the driver's seat, billionaire Mukesh Ambani is now focusing on one big project, green energy. He has plans to spend $75 billion on clean energy projects over the next 15 years. The focus is on hydrogen fuel. The government too has come out with an ambitious plan to ramp up production of green hydrogen and become a net exporter. But what exactly is green hydrogen that everyone is talking about? We decode it for you.
India took two significant steps towards a greener future this week. On Tuesday, the country's largest power generator, NTPC, announced the commissioning of India's first green hydrogen blending project. Under the project, the public sector company has started blending green hydrogen with piped natural gas or PNG in Surat. And the second and much bigger push came from the centre the next day. The Union Cabinet sanctioned ₹19,744 crore towards the National Green Hydrogen Mission. The incentive came about 16 months after Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced the National Hydrogen Mission on Independence Day of 2021. India is now among a handful of countries to have put the money on the table for green hydrogen. It has joined the global race to produce and export green hydrogen. Unlike coal or methane, better known as natural gas, hydrogen is abundant on Earth. Water, plants, and all living beings like humans and animals contain hydrogen atoms. Since water is abundant, hydrogen can be easily obtained from it too. Hydrogen is an invisible gas, but different colors are associated with its production. The color indicates the source or process of hydrogen production. Take gray hydrogen, for example. This is the most common method of obtaining hydrogen at present. Gray hydrogen is obtained from natural gas. This leads to the release of carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide as byproducts. Then there is black or brown hydrogen. Hydrogen obtained from black coal or brown coal, better known as lignite, is referred to as black or brown hydrogen, respectively. In the hydrogen spectrum, black and brown hydrogen are the most environmentally damaging. Green hydrogen is obtained from water. To produce green hydrogen, electricity from renewable sources such as solar or wind is used for electrolysis. This leads to the release of hydrogen from water, and this hydrogen is called green hydrogen. There are no greenhouse emissions in the process of creating green hydrogen. This green approach to producing hydrogen is good for sustainability, but it drives up costs. Additionally, only a handful of Indian companies manufacture electrolyzers, which are used to generate green hydrogen. According to the Energy and Resources Institute, green hydrogen production costs ₹5 to $6 per kilogram. This makes it too expensive for industries like steel, fertilizers, and long-range shipping to adopt. For a broader adoption, green hydrogen prices need to come down to at least $2 per kg. Reliance Chairman Mukesh Ambani has proposed that India should aim to bring down prices to $1 per kg. But this price reduction will only be possible if we start manufacturing electrolyzers in India on a much larger scale. With the centre coming out with the National Green Hydrogen Mission and allotting about 20,000 crore rupees towards it, things are likely to fall in line. Broad contours of the fund allotment are now in public. Much will depend on how this policy is implemented and how the hydrogen production cost is brought down.
The nation's trusted bank, SBI, the banker to every Indian.
The government also aims to create at least 600,000 jobs by 2030. That's all for today. Catch the next episode of The Morning Show tomorrow. Thank you for watching.
For more news, views and updates, subscribe to Business Standard on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast and Spotify. Also follow us on YouTube, Vimeo, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn.